Ja, gute Woche. So this week, I thought we've been talking about some of the great figures from Tanakh and learning the lessons from them. This time, we're focused on a figure who started a tragic story, started out as a very great person, but ended up becoming a lesson for us in the other direction. So I'm talking about Doeg HaAdoimi, if you've heard the name. This is Doeg HaAdoimi. He was, well, we'll see who he was. He was, if we're starting the story, he was one of the Gedolei HaDor. He was one of the Gedolei HaDor, and he ended up going down in history as the example of the very great Talmid Chacham, who, because of his character flaws, because of his problems with his midas, ended up bringing himself down to to rock bottom. And it's something that's worth studying more for the purpose of learning the lesson of midas, learning the lesson of being in touch with our character and on top of our character. So let's learn this story. Like we said, the story starts with Doeg HaAdoimi. He's one of the, in Hebrew,
English, just
I
spell.
guess it would be D-O, little apostrophe E-G, Doeg. It's
Okay.
actually from the word de'aga, concern, worry. Where was the worry? So the truth is, I don't know where his parents got the name from, but the Mefarshim say that there's always a certain hashgacha in the name, that Hashem was always watching him with a certain concern. Where is this going? So he's one of the greatest. One of the Gedolei HaDor, one of the greatest Talmid Chachamim of the time. Not only that, he's one of the leading Talmid Chachamim in Shaul's court. He was the head of the Sanhedrin. Very, very great personality. And just as we're going to say as we're going along, Torah learning on its own does a lot to elevate a person, but it does not guarantee. It doesn't guarantee a person's perfection. It doesn't guarantee a person's character. And this is basically why we need what we call today. If we'll put it into modern terms, this is where we need the Musar ingredient. The, what's that? Okay, meaning to be true, to be enhancing a person's connection with Hashem and a person's general personal avodah, general personal connection with his midas, character, etc. So what happens? The story really starts, and we'll get to the thick of the story, but the story really starts when David first joins Shaul's court. How did that happen? How did that happen? It was at a point where Shaul was starting to suffer from what the Navi calls Ruach Ra. After Hashem had already decided he's not going to be the king anymore. And after Shmuel already secretly went along and anointed David as king, so at this point, the deeper pnimius of the king already had moved over to David. Halachically, he wasn't the king yet, and practically, he wasn't the king yet. And as we'll see soon, the fact that he had been anointed king just got him into a lot of trouble and tsaros. But the special siyata d'shmaya, the special ruchnius that Hashem grants to a king, was already with David and it was taken away from Shaul. All of a sudden, Shaul felt this deep hole in himself, which manifested as what we'll call the Ruach Ra to an extent. He wasn't even really responsible for his, he went to a certain melancholy state, and he wasn't even really responsible for his actions and decisions anymore. It was a very, the end of the story of Shaul was a very sad story, even though Lemaise said it's very important to realize that Shaul, by the time he got to Gan Eden, he had established himself as one of the shining stars of our history in a very great place. And it'd be worth studying his story separately. But now we're touching on it in a little more of a side way. But whatever the case is, he was already starting to suffer from this Ruach Ra, went into these, again, I'm scared to use expressions that we use today, but what we would perceive as certain bouts of depression, melancholy, and the suggestion was made that he needs to have a musician. And this is where David was brought into. They found David. He was the person who was found. and deemed to be the right person, and he was brought into Shaul's court for this purpose.
This is before Goliath, that he was brought into the court.
This was before Goliath, yes. Now, when David made his appearance in Shaul's court, see, as we spoke about David. David had grown to very, very great heights outside of the public eye. He hadn't really been a party. He was out in the fields, right? We talked about that. He was out in the fields. People didn't realize that there was a giant who was growing and developing. And they may have thought, you look at what's going on in Sanhedrin, etc. There you see where all the great Gedolim of the time were. They didn't realize that there's somebody who's actually outshining all of them who's outside of the public eye. When David was brought into Shaul's court, this was where he actually moved into the center of things and started coming out as a very, very great Torah luminary. Started happening was that all of a sudden, Doeg, who had been the top authority in Shaul's court, suddenly started feeling his status being threatened a little bit. David was a competing force. Now, David was not actively competing. David wasn't consciously competing with anybody. We know that David was the epitome of the self-effacing person, being the ma'at himself, etc. But Doeg was suddenly starting to feel like his status is being threatened. And this started gnawing at him. This started gnawing at him. Now, what's he going to do about it? He's the straightforward backstabbing that was common in all the royal courts didn't really hold in a court like Shaul HaMelech's. But yet, in a subtle way, it already started. Doeg was not above those feelings, and that's exactly the problem. Now, here we see a frightening example, a scary example of how a bad midah that was there, and there really wasn't really much he could do about it. He couldn't act on it. He couldn't tell anybody to keep it out without, humiliating himself or even worse, right? But it was there. It was there. And when different situations came up, that he was able to act on it. So his whole vision was kind of tainted by his resentment of David. And here's where we're going to see where things really started going in the wrong direction. It already started, and this is also not where we're going to put our main focus, but it already started when afterwards, as you mentioned, when David beat Goliath and Shaul asked, "Who is this?" That was a strange question. Because it was just mentioned here, he had already been playing in Shaul's courts. And Mefarshim explained, of course he knew who he was. That wasn't the question. The question is, after he beat Goliath, I want to move him up in his position. Is he qualified? Is he the right person? Is his background appropriate? Etc. Right? And that's what David meant when he asked, who is this? Is he is Shaul? Yeah, Shaul. That's what Shaul meant when he asked, who is this? And there Doeg was the one to step in and say, well, it's just important that you realize that there are certain problems with his lineage, right? That's where the machlokes about David's kashrus came in. He became from Rus Hamoyavia. Can you make a shidduch with him, etc. Okay, but here it's still subtle. Here it's still subtle. What really brought things to a head was with an incident that happened later after David is. Slowly but surely, Shaul is starting to feel threatened with David. Everybody's familiar with the story in a general way. And again, it's not our main focus now. But slowly but surely, Shaul is starting to feel more and more threatened by David until he's convinced that David is actually plotting against him. And it reaches a point where Shaul makes it very clear he's out to kill David. And David has to run away. It wasn't public yet. It wasn't public yet. David knew, and Yonasan knew, David, Shaul's oldest son knew, that Shaul was now intent, he now wanted to kill David.
For what?
What's that?
For what?
For David plotting to overthrow him, plotting to unseat him. In Boyer the Malchus, yeah, in Shaul's mind, David had no such plans. Even though David had already been anointed king by Hashem, he had absolutely no such plans. He was going to wait things out, to wait to see how Hashem plays them out. But again, Shaul with his Ruach Ra was so edgy that he was seeing all these things in David and he decided he wanted to kill him. David had to run away. Now, nobody else knows at this point. So what does David do? He runs away and he knows now that he's going to be on the run for a long time. He's going to be a paleit. He's going to be a fugitive now for a long time. He has to set himself up. So he went to, on his way, running out, he stopped in the city. Everybody's very familiar with the name of the city by now, the city called Noiv. Noiv was the city of Kohanim. And he stopped in there and came to the Kohen Gadol, the man who was in charge of Noiv. Achimelech, his name was Achimelech HaKohen. And he basically said to him, David, how did people know David? David was one of the main people at this point in Shaul's court. David was his son-in-law. And he was the man who Shaul would entrust with the most complicated missions. He was the head of the special forces, if we put it that way. And that's how everybody knew David. David was one of Shaul's most trusted and most capable people. So David now had to get away, and he desperately needed food. He ran away without any food, and he needed basic weapons just in order to be able to survive. So he came to Achimelech. Basically, he needed to get from him food and a sword. That's what he needed. Now, David was in a situation, his life was in extreme danger, and he figured it's not a good idea for him to tell Achimelech what the story is. He'd be endangering Achimelech, not just himself. He'd also be endangering Achimelech. So he decided to just kind of like, he told Achimelech, I'm on a secret mission. I need help. I just need some food. I need some provisions. I need food. I need a sword. And I'm out of here. And Achimelech gave him that. He gave him food. He gave him the sword. The sword was actually the sword that had belonged to Goliath, who he had killed. Sorry. Yeah, it was the sword that had, sorry, just lost it here. Yeah, the sword of Goliath, who David had killed. Whatever it is, Achimelech gave him that, and David ran away. It happened to be that who was there at the time? Doeg was there. Doeg had come to Noiv for the purpose of engaging in Torah with the Kohanim. Davening. That's what he was there for. He was there to daven. He was there to learn Torah. He was a high class Torah grade. He wasn't a faker, right? And he was there in Noiv to take advantage of the Ruchnius there. But he was there when there was this exchange between David and Achimelech. Again, what happened was, let's have this clear, what happened, because it comes important later. He came to Achimelech, told him, I'm on a secret mission. I desperately need some food and a weapon. Achimelech gave him food, gave him the sword, and David ran on, and Doeg had witnessed all this. Okay, now we're going to fast forward a little.
Did Doeg know that David's life? Did he know that was a lie, basically, at that point?
I don't know. I don't know. But he heard this, he heard the exchange. What happens? We fast forward a little bit, and Shaul is pursuing David. He's after David, after David. David is running away, and David is in, and Shaul is after him. Now Shaul is so deeply entrenched in his ruach ra'ah that he's sure. How does paranoia work? Let's say, we're a circle of close friends, and I decide that so and so is out to get me. Why isn't anybody else telling me about it? Answer is because nobody knows. Why doesn't anybody know? Because he's not out to get you, right? And that's why nobody's telling you about it. But in the mind of a person who's too paranoid, the reason is that everybody's in it together. You're all against me. That's the proof to that is that none of you are telling me what's going on. And this is what actually was going on in Shaul's mind right now. At one point, he says to his, he was sitting with his people, and he says to them as follows: Gam lekulchem yitein ben yishai sodei sukramim. I know what's going on in all of your minds. You're all waiting for the rewards that David is going to give you, for all the things that you're going to be getting from him. And you're waiting for the positions that he's going to give you. Right? Why? Kikshartem kulchem alai. You're all plotting against me. Ve'ein goyles ozni. None of you are letting me in on the secret. to his close circle of advisors. And he says, even Yoino-san is against me in this. It's such a terrible situation where my own son is taking my servant and helping him against me on this day. What's that?
That part, no one.
Well, helping him, la'orev, meaning
No.
helping him fight me, helping him ambush me, helping ambush me. That was the lashon here. So, who's going to tell me what's that? Helping him escape, right? But he said he's helping him fight me. He's helping him set up to kill me, right? So here we bring in another nisayon, and this is something that the Rambam says. The Rambam says that one of the very big dangers. It says that you should keep al tisvada, keep away from the royal courts. Talking about Jewish royal courts. Why? Because there's a big danger in the royal court. In the royal court, there's always this atmosphere of who's getting closest in with the king, who has the most ins with the king, who has the king's ear most. There's this constant competition going on between the people in the court, these inner politics and intrigues. Who has the king's favor? Who has the king's attention? Who has the king's ear?
Excuse me.
And
Auntie's better or she's who's Jewish course, is that what you said?
what's that? Yes. Yes. As we're going to see now. So now, Shaul makes this declaration. He's waiting for the person to prove his loyalty and tell him what's going on. Ah, this already added the Nisayon. I mean, whoever's going to come to Shaul and actually tell him, I know what's going on, I'm going to tell you, is now going to be gaining a very important in with Shaul. He's going to come out now as the most loyal one. Now, again, nobody has anything to tell Shaul. Why not? Because there was nothing to tell, there was nothing going on. Except one person. Doeg had what to say. Bayan Doeg Adoni. Doeg responded and said as follows. He said, I have the information. And he tells him like this: I saw Ben Yishai come to Noiv to Achimelech ben Achitub, and I saw him consult with the Urim V'Tumim there. He consulted the Urim V'Tumim. I forgot to mention that. That was part of what he did. And Achimelech gave him food, and he gave him the sword of Goliath. Okay. So what's going on here? The Malbim notes a few subtleties in what actually happened here. Doeg, it could be that he just told exactly what happened. I was sitting there, Achimelech was there. All of a sudden, David showed up in a storm, told Achimelech that he's on a secret mission, and asked to consult with Urim V'Tumim and asked for some food, and Achimelech gave him the food and sent him on. Had he said it that way, okay, everything is fine, right? There would be no room. But Doeg, half consciously, unconsciously, consciously, presented the story a little differently. First of all, he didn't say what David told Achimelech. How does he describe it? He says, he came to Achimelech as though they have this meeting, right? I don't know what went on there. Like the Malbim says, the way he's portraying it was like they had this meeting together. He came, he had a meeting with him. And then all I saw was that he consulted with the Urim V'Tumim and that Achimelech gave him the sword and the food, and not a word about what David actually told Achimelech. In other words, Doeg is helping. It was true. David came to Achimelech and Achimelech gave him the food. But Doeg is tweaking the picture in order to portray it in a certain way. You want to find the information about who's plotting against you? Well, I'll tell you this story. He came, he had a meeting with Achimelech, and the next thing I know, David is consulting with the Urim V'Tumim and getting the food and the sword from Achimelech.
That's out for Achimelech. That doesn't say anything bad about David. It's more about Achimelech or whatever.
Well, first of all, the premise of it is that David is plotting with David, right? That's A. And it's true. That's right. He was talking against Achimelech, but the main point was that Shaul was asking, who has information about David's plans? And he came and said, I'm the one with the information. His main game was that this is just going to, as far as Doeg was concerned, maybe David was already a done deal with Shaul. But he is the one who's helping contribute to that sense of, yes, there is something going on, and I'm going to give you the information.
Hear the conversation with Doug and
Yeah,
okay.
it was done very straightforward, open, blatant. And that's why the Malbim says this was the main blame here on Doeg, was that he just skipped that, right? And here things start moving ahead very quickly. So Shaul HaMelech, that's it, he has his information. He sees the picture clearly, and he calls for Ahimelech and he accuses him of plotting together with Ben Yishai. And I know that you gave him the food and you enabled him to consult with the Urim and Tumim, and you are helping him plot against me. So Ahimelech responds and says, "Mi b'kol avodecho." He says, "What do you mean? Of course, David came to me and I helped him. He's one of the most loyal servants. He's your son-in-law. He is one of the most highest people in your court. This is not the first time he consulted the Urim and Tumim. Anytime there were military operations going on, they were consulting the Urim and Tumim." He says, "This is the first time I consulted for him with the Urim and Tumim. I don't know anything about any plots. This was very classic. He came to me." Okay. He gives his defense, but Shaul's mind is already set. Shaul knows exactly what's going on. He says, "No, it's a done deal. You're going to die. You were involved in plotting against me, and you and your entire family are going to be put to death." Okay. So now, Shaul sees it all coming together now. The picture is clear. David had been plotting the whole time, and now he finally discovered where the hornet's nest actually is. It was Noiv, the whole city of the Kayanim. They're the ones who are busy setting up this revolt. So he goes out with a force toward Noiv, and he instructs his officers. He says, "Okay, kill them. This is a whole city of Mordim b'Malchus. Kill them." Now, who are his main commanders? His main commanders, say the top military people, were very, very high level Talmid Chachamim. There was Avner and Amasa. These were the two top generals. Both of them were clearly in touch with reality, and they said that there's nothing here. We can't do this. We can't do this. They're simply straightforward, refused the order.
Call up this Doeg if he was there and heard everything as a witness and say, "Doeg,
I
you were
did.
there.
Yeah.
What did we talk about? What did he tell me? Why didn't he do that? Why didn't he just..."
Shaul was not putting this through a rational process.
No, I mean Avimelech. Ahimelech. Whatever, the Cohen that's just accused
Yeah.
of plotting with David. You said Doeg was there, heard the whole conversation. Why, when he gets accused by Shaul, why wouldn't he say, "Let me call up witnesses who will tell you what David said to me"?
I hear. I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't know if he was aware that David was listening. I don't know. It
No.
could be also that he wasn't given the chance. When you were interacting with the king, you weren't necessarily given a chance to say your thing. So I don't know. We could only use our imagination to figure out what the scene actually looked like. Okay. So no, Shaul's top officers, Choshev and Talmid Chachamim and Yirei Shamayim, they said, "We can't do this." And therefore the king turns to Doeg and says, "Okay, so you're the one who knows the story. Right? You're the one who actually has the information. You be the one to do it." And all of a sudden, Doeg finds himself in a terrible crossroads. Meaning he hadn't necessarily envisioned it going here so fast. He was trying to say his thing in order to gain himself the favor. But all of a sudden he finds himself here, basically in a place of he came and told Shaul that this is going on. And now, if we'll put it in, we'll put it into practical perspective, his choices now are either you backtrack and say to Shaul, wait, I didn't really tell you the story right. Let me tell you exactly what happened. He either moves back or he goes all the way. It started with, like Chazal tells, started with Lashon Hara. And now, are you going to go from Lashon Hara to murder, to mass murder? So basically, this was the point in Doeg's life where it was, which way are you going? Are you backing out, suffering the humiliation, but you're in Gan Eden, you saved your place? Or are you going all the way, started with a little bit of rishis, are you going to get yourself all the way into the depths of Gehenna? And tragically, that was the decision he made. Doeg went ahead, and he actually facilitated wiping out the whole city of Noiv Yerachayanim. And it's interesting that this is where he got himself into the place where when the Mishnah says Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek L'Olam Haba, it lists that distinguished list of those from the famous names of Kol Yisrael in the history who are not, and among them we have Doeg Achitofel, very tragically. And this is where it happens. So again, what started out with that sense of ego and the resentment toward David, the envy, feeling threatened, a little bit of subtle backstabbing here, just trying to block him from becoming the king's son-in-law. From there, it led to proper Lashon Hara, which then led to mass bloodshed and knocked Doeg off the map of history. Now, we'll note something, that the main blame for what happened here is put on Doeg, not on Shaul. In fact, it's even more than that. The Mefarshim say that when Ahimelech and his family were wiped out, who are they? They were descendants of Eli. Eli, there had been a curse sitting on Eli's family for reasons that had happened back then. And here was Hashem actually carrying it through. And therefore, Shaul was actually considered an innocent, almost like almost like it wasn't his fault. He was in that state. Things were happening that were beyond his bechira. The villain that's named here, the Rasha in this story, is Doeg. So basically, okay, how does the story continue? There isn't really a happy ending to this story. There isn't. This was a very tragic story. David held himself, but it says afterwards, David held himself very responsible for what happened. Chazal even say that just put some of the blame on Yohanan's son, so that when they parted, he should have given him food. That would have avoided the whole issue. But whatever the case is, what happens afterwards is that yes, they wiped out the whole family. One son of Ahimelech managed to run away. His name was Avyasar, and he went running to David. And David basically blamed himself for what happened and ended up telling Avyasar, you stay with me. Avyasar became a part of David's camp. He became David's Kohen Gadol. He became the one who David would consult with the Urim V'Tumim. And David told him, you stay with me. So I'm responsible for the loss of your father's whole family. Stay with me without fear. Because anybody who wants to get you will have to get me first. You're going to be under my care. Now, okay, that's the sad ending. That's the sad ending. But this story, Chazal highlight this story for us as an example of the care we have to have with our midos, the care we have to, the awareness that we have to have of what's going on inside of us. And to be on top of how to realize how a bad Mida that's festering, you never know where it's going to rear its ugly head and where it's going to get you. To be on top of yourself, top of your character, be aware of your struggles. A person, I'll just finish this point. We have our faults, we have our areas. That's how Hashem set us up. And you're not meant to resolve all of them in one shot. But what you are meant to do is to be able to identify yourself. What are my struggles? What are my faults? To be aware of them, to be taking steps to get them under control, to work on them, to make progress. We're not going to become perfect overnight. That's not what we're meant to come away from with this story. What we are meant to come away from is not to just be in a place of complacently sailing forward. Any difficulty that I have with people around me is because. All because of their issues, right? You know how the expression that they say, it goes better in Hebrew, but try to translate it to English. Say, ask the person, you know, Lama ata kol kach atzbani? Why are you so irritable? Because ani lo atzbani, pashut kulam atzbanim oti, right? Everybody around me is getting on my nerves. Why are you so irritable? It's not me. Everybody around is very irritating. So this is the point. Be aware of yourself. Be aware of your struggles. Don't make yourself meshuga. Don't make yourself meshuggah, but be aware, be able to acknowledge them for yourself. Work on them. Again, not in a way of you have to knock it out overnight. It doesn't work that way. But to realize that this is one of the prod, that's the reason we have flaws. Hashem gave us flaws in order for us to become aware of them and to work on them. And we'll round this out with a statement made by the Gaon of Vilna would elaborate on this. If a person discovers that he has a problematic midah, it's not like, oh boy, how could that be? On the contrary, our purpose in life. I've said this a few times to the Ramchal. The neshama really is a perfect being, but Hashem wants to give our life meaning, and therefore He actually tacked on faults. He gave us faults as gifts, because we take these faults and we work with them, and that's how we polish ourselves. We make ourselves into something great. And therefore, the Gra says that a person's primary purpose in life is to be working on his character flaws, working on his midos. It's not b'di'evet. It's not, hey, I have a problem, and that's the only reason. I would have liked to think I'm perfect. If you would think you're perfect, then you really don't have a place in this world. There's no perfect. We don't need perfect people. Hashem has no purpose in that. One of the Avigdor Miller said that basically all of Avodas Hashem boils into three primary areas. We're not going to. One of them is a constant life career of perfecting our character. I'm working on our character. I'm improving on our character. It's not a type of thing that, oh, I have a midas problem here. Oh, that's an issue. I'm not supposed to have it. I'm going to knock it off, and next week I'll be perfect. No, we're here to work. We're here to work. We're here to appreciate the faults as calls from Hashem. Here's where you can gain your greatness. You can gain your greatness by working on this midah. You might be working on it for years. Don't get discouraged. That's where your greatness lies. But it starts with the ability to face it, the ability to identify it, the ability to acknowledge it, and then we're actually engaged in one of the greatest purposes, one of the greatest tafkidim that we have in life. Ha-gut-tavach. Yes.
Okay, two things. First of
Thank you.
all,
Good to talk.
most important lessons is because everybody will make a mistake. Okay, so he made a mistake this Doeg, and he didn't tell the entire truth, and then he saw what the consequences were. So he had the opportunity to correct it.
That's right.
And we're always making mistakes. The question is whether you feel like, well, I've made this one mistake, now it's going to be too embarrassing to
Ooh.
get out of it, you know, like.
That is definitely one of the salient points here. Sometimes a person reaches that point where you're faced with, I made a mistake. Where is it going to take me now? In fact,
Big enough to say, I made a mistake, I'm sorry, and here's the reality, whatever it is. Like, that's
well
very
said.
hard to do, but that he had the opportunity, he missed it. But what I don't understand is Shaul was depressed and paranoid, and he acted not on good meadows, and he's not held accountable, and why?
Because
Because
Shaul
how
was
do
in
you,
a.
that the Shem's decided X or Y, and so you're just the messenger? Well, how can
The
you let him off
impression,
the hook?
it's scary to say the words, but the impression that one gets both from the Psukim and from Chazal and the Mefarshim is that Shaul was in an emotional state where he wasn't responsible for his decisions.
Insanity
I didn't want to use the word. I
defense.
didn't want to use the word, but he really, Hashem put him into a place and guided his decisions, and he was. Yeah, at the end of his life, you know, all the way at the end, he came back with a. I shouldn't say came back. He never went off, but he shone. He brought himself to Olam Haba in the greatest way possible. But yes, throughout this process, Hashem really put him into a place where he was up against something that he couldn't, wasn't within his abilities.
I don't understand that. That Paro had the same thing then. Hashem took away his Bechira. He's taking away Shaul's Bechira. Well, he took away Paro's Bechira, and Paro is still held responsible.
Paro was held responsible.
Hashem
Paro
took away his
responsible.
Bechira. You could say the same thing.
Paro, you know, any situation where Hashem takes away a person's bechira, it's very, very rare. In those situations, he won't be held responsible. Paro was held responsible for the decisions he made leading up to the loss of his bechira. By the time he lost his bechira, it was a punishment for all the choices he had already made.
And Shaul, not the same. He decided to not admit when he made a mistake. He decided Shaul had
And he
his
was held
own.
responsible for. He certainly was. He was punished for that. That's why he lost the Malucha. Definitely. Absolutely. Shaul was punished for the mistakes that he made before, and
But
he
he's
had
now looked down,
to.
banned on history. We use his name. Like if somebody like that, we wouldn't use his name.
That's right. That's right. I said we have to dedicate a separate shiur to Shaul. It's a subject that has to be well understood. Shaul was in a very, very different place than Doeg. A difference between. Not east and west, but Mars and Jupiter.
I don't know. Anybody could go to court and claim insanity. No,
Anybody could, but only Hashem has to decide whether it's true or not. Anybody can claim it, and everybody does claim it.
Right.
But
But no, we
Hashem
hold them
decides.
responsible. I don't care if you're insane,
And
but
Hashem
you
decides.